2011 is 4 days old, and so are your New Year's resolutions. Motivation runs high at the beginning of the year, but how do you make it last? It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're going to talk about how to set realistic goals and what you need to do to achieve them. Kevin Blankenship is a social psychologist at Iowa State University. He'll walk us through the goal-setting process and talk about some of the factors that can lead to success or failure. The most popular New Year's resolution is, of course, to lose weight. Megan Muller is the wellness program coordinator at the University of Iowa. She has some advice for making healthy and achievable goals when it comes to fitness, and she'll tell us why we may need to look beyond the numbers on our scale when we make those goals. And later this hour, Brenda Schmidt from Iowa State University Extension will be here to talk about financial goal setting. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Many of us make New Year's resolutions to lose weight, to eat better, to be more organized, to control our spending. But those resolutions are hard to maintain. Today, we're going to talk about how to set realistic goals and what you need to do to achieve them. Kevin Blankenship is an assistant professor of psychology at Iowa State University. Hello, Kevin.
Hello.
And also with us is Megan Muller. She's the wellness program coordinator at the University of Iowa. Megan, thank you for coming in today.
Good morning.
And Kevin, I want to start with you. We all have things, of course, that we want to achieve or things that we want to change about ourselves. When we set a goal, what sort of process should we go through to make sure that it's a sound goal?
Well, when we usually start, we'll start with something very abstract. So we'll say something like, well, I would like I would like to lose weight, or I would like to get better grades in school. One of the things that helps is trying to be as specific as you can, kind of creating a more concrete process for having these more abstract goals. So, for example, saying, well, I would like to lose X number of pounds within, say, a month or a couple of months, or, you know, I would like to raise my GPA up X amount in certain kinds of courses. So trying to be a little bit more focused and have more of a concrete type of mindset when creating these goals would help.
Okay, to make it specific, something that you really can shoot for. Megan, you work with a lot of people who have fitness goals, and I'm sure a lot of people come to you and say, Megan, I want to lose 30 pounds. What process would you go through with someone who comes to you with that goal to help them break it down and make it achievable?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, exactly as Kevin said, that is a very common goal, an outcome associated with it, losing 30 pounds or losing 15 pounds. And so what's really important is you take that outcome goal and you turn it into some behavioral goals. So how are you going to go about that? What's your plan? There's lots of ways one can lose 15 pounds. And so oftentimes, focusing on weight, the behaviors then are things regarding physical activity, modifying nutrition patterns. And so making those types of goals very specific as well. So, you know, when talking about New Year's resolutions, it is often kind of that pie in the sky, and we need to operationalize that plan.
So how do you operationalize that? If I came to you and said, I want to lose 30 pounds, how would you break that down with me?
Mm-hmm. Well, first question would be, have you had experience with weight loss in the past? And if the answer is yes, what worked? What didn't work? And we're going to focus on the things that worked for you. Everybody is so different. You know, if there was a one-size-fits-all approach to weight loss, we would all know about it. We would all be doing it. We probably wouldn't be setting New Year's resolutions in that area. But the reality is we're all very, very busy. We all have different lives, different interests related to physical activity and exercise, what we like, what we don't like, and also regarding nutrition. So I think the first question is what's worked in the past and how can we capitalize on some of those things?
Do you think weight loss is a good goal? If you're setting a goal in the fitness arena, is losing X number of pounds a good goal to shoot for?
Yeah, it's an outcome. A lot of us are really motivated by numbers and seeing the needle move on the scale, absolutely. People are motivated by it for a lot of different reasons, sometimes health reasons, sometimes vanity reasons. I want to look better in my pair of jeans. And that's great. That's what gets people going. It's what gets people motivated. But without a foundation of that goal, i.e. the behaviors, it's probably not a great goal. There definitely needs to be some homework that's done in order to make it a good goal.
Do you think that it would be a better idea to say, I want to be more physically fit,
mm-hmm.
or set a goal like that, which it doesn't seem nearly as measurable as mm-hmm. something you can see on mm-hmm. on the bathroom scale.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly right. Physical activity is a great way to go about achieving that weight loss goal, and in making it specific. Again, just like Kevin said, so I want to lose weight. I know I need to be more physically active. Rather than saying exercise more, that goal is probably going to turn into something like, I'm going to go for a walk 3 nights a week after work, before dinner, in my driveway or at the track at the gym. So there's a time, a place, days of the week, an exercise buddy or accountability factor if you have one of those. Also bringing in strategies such as, what do I need to pack? Do I need to pack my tennis shoes in the morning before I go to work so I can walk after work? Do I need to, bring my gloves and my hat if I'm going to go outside? Do I need to check the weather to see if it's going to be icy? So there's lots of homework and planning then that goes into those goals.
Kevin, once you've set a goal and you have an outcome that you're hoping to achieve, you mentioned, Megan, having an exercise buddy or somebody to help keep you accountable. Kevin, do you think it's a good idea to make your goals public, to tell other people about them?
Yeah, I think being very being public, having that kind of commitment to others would definitely help. It makes you, as Megan said, it holds you very accountable for those types of things, and you'll be more likely to follow through with that, especially when it becomes more difficult to pursue that goal.
So how do you suggest going about that? How would you pick someone to share a goal with or look for someone to help keep you accountable?
Well, I think friends and significant others would definitely be the first place to go, especially if they have a similar kind of mindset. So, you know, maybe you can find a friend who's also interested in achieving another goal or resolution or even one that you're kind of pursuing. So having kind of exercise buddies, study buddies, those types of things would definitely help.
Are there people to avoid when you're looking for someone to help keep you accountable?
Well, I think, social influence is very powerful. And people who may not believe or may not think that you can actually do that goal, that you can actually complete it, would be a kind of person that you would want to avoid, because they may not help you as much as other people might who believe in you, and they may also at times kind of handicap you to some degree, kind of put roadblocks, as it were, in front of you.
Megan, I see you nodding. Is mm-hmm. this something that you use a lot when you help people achieve their goals, trying to help them reach out to people in their family or friends
yeah,
to help them?
Absolutely. It's always a question. When somebody sets a goal, and we can stay on the topic of exercise, always important to enlist the social support of others. Success and long-term success, furthermore, of the goals increases when people do have that social support. And so you definitely want people who are going to support you and have your best interests in mind as well. So that's always a question, is who can help you and how specifically can they help you? It doesn't have to be somebody that will physically get out there and walk with you, but it might be somebody that when you get to work the next morning will ask you, did you go for your walk? Absolutely. Another thing that our social network can do for us is they can point out our strengths to us. A lot of times we set New Year's resolutions in areas that maybe we've tried and failed in the past. So if you ask somebody, how confident are you that you're going to meet this New Year's resolution or achieve it, sometimes confidence is really low. So a way to build confidence is to look at what our strengths are. What have I done and accomplished in the past, and what strengths allowed me to do that? And will those strengths help you meet your New Year's resolution? And our support system can often help point out our strengths to us that sometimes we can't see for ourselves, or we're too used to pointing out maybe the negative things that get in the way of achieving our goals. And simply asking somebody, why do you think I can do this? Or why do you think this is a good idea? It's amazing sometimes what those people will tell us and can be very motivating.
Kevin, do you think that there are certain people who reach out better, who are better at asking for help?
I think, yes. Excuse me. Some people who are tend to be extroverted are confident in their social network would be more likely to reach out because they know, you know, they're comfortable with the particular relationship. Maybe they can help kind of predict how that person would react, and they would know where to get support in those situations.
You keep using the word social network, and that puts me in mind, of course, of the online social networks that are out there. And I have friends on Facebook who post every day when they go for a run. They post how far they went, and they post their goals for how many miles they want to run in the coming months or years. Megan, have you seen people use those tools effectively?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the whole idea behind Facebook is that it's, you know, people who are in our social network. They might not be physically close to us, but they're friends, they're family members. And there's a lot of new research to support that who we hang around, whether that's physically or via our social media outlets, has a big influence on the behaviors that we choose to do. So, for example, somebody that is a smoker who surrounds themselves with non-smokers is much more likely to quit than somebody who surrounds themselves with other people who smoke. The same is true of weight. There's new research that supports that people who are trying to lose weight or who are overweight tend to have social groups who are overweight as well. So it definitely plays a role.
We have a tweet from Joe who says she's running a half marathon in June and she's following a Runkeeper iPhone app course to get her there. And she also has a number of other work resolutions that she's working on as well. But have you also seen people use these new apps on their phones and other technology to track their progress? Have you seen people use that well,
yeah.
Megan?
Yeah, and I really admire people like Joan who know how to take advantage of all of the technology that's out there. That might be a New Year's resolution of mine, actually, is to get more on board with some of the technology that's available. But absolutely, we have it at our fingertips. There are programs that will give motivational messages. And related to outcomes, what you're able to see with some of those is, you know, if you have a goal, what your pace is, how far you went, how you're progressing, and nothing succeeds like success is a saying that we use oftentimes. So as you're able to see your progress along the way, that's really motivating.
We're talking about New Year's resolutions and goal setting today, setting achievable goals and what you need to do to achieve those goals. My guests are Megan Moeller, she's the Wellness Program Coordinator at the University of Iowa, and Kevin Blankenship, who's an Assistant Professor of Psychology at Iowa State University. And you're welcome to join our conversation. We'd love to hear your success story. What goal did you set and achieve, and how did you do it? 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Or if you're working on a goal right now and you'd like to ask Megan or Kevin for a little bit of advice, give us a call, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about goal setting. A lot of us set New Year's resolutions, and motivation is high at the beginning of the year, but those resolutions can be difficult to maintain. Today we're talking about setting reasonable goals and what we need to do to achieve them. My guests are Megan Moeller. She's the Wellness Program Coordinator at the University of Iowa. Kevin Blankenship is also here. He's an Assistant Professor of Psychology at Iowa State University. Later on this hour, we're going to be talking about financial goal setting. And we'd love to hear from you. What goals have you set and achieved in the past? What are your success stories? We'd love to hear how you did it, and maybe that'll give the rest of us a little bit of inspiration. Or if there's something you're working on right now, let us know about the process. If you're looking for any advice, you can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Kevin, when we sit down to work on a goal, set a goal, do we need to also look at the world around us, look at our family environment, and think about our past as we take into account what we need to do to achieve that goal?
Yeah, I think so. I think, again, with the social support would definitely matter. People kind of acknowledging and recognizing people who would help with the goal, those that would perhaps set barriers. So kind of understanding your network, the strength of your network, and how everybody kind of fits in there would definitely help.
Megan, when you work on goal setting with people, what kind of process do you go through to pinpoint some of the pitfalls that they may run into?
Yeah, well, everybody's the expert on themselves, so it is definitely important to spend some time having a conversation around what's worked and hasn't worked in the past. Kind of looking at, you know, people's routine, day-to-day routine is really important. And from there, kind of identifying, you know, times of the day, when certain things can get fit in. One of the number one barriers to fitting in healthy behaviors for ourselves is time. Hear it over and over again. There's just not enough time to exercise. There's just not enough time to chop up fresh vegetables to put in my lunch or to prepare for meals. So people need to get creative, you know. Just off the top of my head, some things that I know others have done that have worked really well, getting children involved in the process. Is there one or two nights a week when a child can have a major role in the meal preparation, which gives mom a little bit more time to hop on the treadmill or get her walk in? Doing a lot of meal preparation on a Sunday. So getting things laid out, shopped for, and ready to go for the week ahead. And that's really a process, identifying when those opportunities are to change some patterns.
As far as making goals to eat healthier, do you also help people identify the times when they may be at their weakest or where there may be treats that they need to avoid?
Yeah. And so it's not about giving up all of the things that we love and enjoy. I never want that to be the message, because then all of a sudden the goal doesn't sound like fun anymore and it doesn't sound very motivating. But yeah, absolutely. Usually people have one or two areas in their day or in their week, whether that's on the Monday through Friday work week or on the weekends, that we call the low-hanging fruit, no pun intended, that are just areas in our week where they're huge pitfalls for us. So, overeating on pizza on Friday night, you know, just eliminating that one behavior could help one achieve their weight loss goals, or that one soda a day that's contributing an extra 200 to 300 calories over the course of the week could be the magic bullet to start weight loss. So usually there are one or two pretty simple aha areas that after spending some time planning, people can identify. But I think when it comes to time, that's one of the things we often fail to do with New Year's resolutions, is to sit down and actually, you know, think about them more than just, you know, saying what they are.
It's funny that you use the phrase, the goal isn't fun anymore. When somebody says, I want to lose 20 pounds, that doesn't sound fun. Do you help people reframe their goals so that it actually sounds like something they want to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And we call that our vision planning. And so what do you want the picture to look like a year from now, 5 years from now? And that's when people usually conjure up pictures of things like, I want to be able to hike up and down the Grand Canyon. I want to be able to run the bases with my grandkids in the backyard. And you can hear the excitement in people's voices when they talk about those powerful motivators. And that's what makes the goal fun. So when the alarm clock's going off at 5 in the morning, oh, it's not fun at all. But when people can connect to that powerful vision, we remember why we're doing it. And so that vision planning is extremely important.
Kevin, obviously meeting goals has a lot to do with what's going on in our heads. How do you put yourself in the right frame of mind to succeed?
Well, I think being motivated helps. I mean, having kind of a positive attitude, kind of act as if you're moving toward the goal, being kind of motivated to that in that regard, I think would be beneficial. I mean, having kind of a positive opinion of it. You know, you need to think that, you know, okay, losing weight is, it's a positive thing. I feel positively about it. My friends do. Kind of keeping that in mind and kind of restructuring beliefs around that particular positive attitude would be one way to do it.
What do you think sets people up to fail when they set a goal, Kevin?
I think when the feedback comes that's relatively negative, I think that kind of derails people to some degree. And then again, having that kind of positive mindset will help kind of smooth over the setbacks. And those things are just going to happen regardless of how successful you think you're going to be, how much you like it, how much support you'll have. So kind of in the face of adversity, having this kind of persistent type of attitude to kind of get you through those kind of low times would be good.
For some of us, achieving the goal or moving forward on the goal is reward in and of itself. But do you think that you need to set up some sort of reward system for yourself to keep you motivated, Kevin?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a reward system, like Megan mentioned, I don't know if you call it cheating, but a little bit of cheating every once in a while. So the soda once a week would certainly kind of be a carrot that would keep people motivated. And I think, you know, to some degree, for some people, even though they can say, well, I've done this, I've succeeded, now I can have my soda, sometimes they just kind of bypass that, you know, so they'll just go through and say, well, I don't need that, and they just kind of keep persevering, you know, without even those little kind of carrots or without the little cheats.
What do you think, Megan, about a reward system?
Yeah, it's definitely a component of goal setting. And so the example Kevin gave, that would be kind of a real tangible reward, something that we can taste, see, feel. But I think as people go on in the goal setting process and really start to understand how the reward system can help with sustained motivation, the intrinsic rewards are more things what we're looking for. So when somebody notices, gosh, you look a lot more awake in the morning, or are you losing weight? Those intrinsic rewards give us a lot of motivation to continue with our behaviors as well. Rewards like goals are very unique to individuals. So, for example, I've worked with people who, for meeting short-term goals, and these are behavioral goals, so the short exercise goals for the week or the nutrition goals for the week that are to support them in that longer-term weight loss goal, will do things like put money in a jar every time those goals are met. If they're partially met, which is still progress, they'll put a little bit less money, but they're still rewarding and then saving that up towards something very meaningful. Probably the neatest reward I ever remember from somebody that I've worked with was a woman who knew that she was going on a vacation and she wanted to do a helicopter tour of the islands. There was a weight limit for the helicopter ride, and as it stood then, she would not be able to do that helicopter ride. So she had a weight loss goal, and a pretty significant weight loss goal. And so she was saving up money for meeting those short-term goals along the way, and that money was to go towards the helicopter trip. And so she achieved it, and I just thought, wow, what a great way to connect your rewards to that vision. Very powerful.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
And she definitely had to spend some time thinking about that. That was not something that I could have come up with for her. That wasn't something that a buddy could have come up with for her.
Now, we've talked about setting measurable goals, something that you can actually measure your progress toward, whether it's grades or weight or anything. But I think any of us who have tried to lose weight and done it by really kickstarting our fitness routine, working out more, have discovered that there's lag time, that the harder you work at first, the more you turn fat into muscle, and the scale does not show you any progress at all. Do you have some advice for better ways to measure your fitness progress? Megan?
Yeah, absolutely. You're exactly right. Sometimes when we don't see that progress, it can be very self-defeating.
Yes.
Very self-defeating, and doesn't make us very excited to continue with our hard work. So some other things that people can notice are you able to go faster? Are you able to go farther? So if people are out there setting New Year's resolutions in fitness and it's not easy, remember how you feel at the end of that workout. You feel tired. You're sweating a lot. Notice that, because I bet you 1 month from now, if you're regular, I bet you're going to get done with the exact same workout and you're going to feel differently. You might feel differently the next day. You might not be as sore. And so those are all things that are showing you're making progress. It's also a great time if people are embarking on, you know, some sort of a long-term plan for physical activity or weight loss to get your numbers checked. Find out what's your blood pressure, what's your cholesterol, what's your blood sugar level. Because those things might change too, where we might not see weight change. And we can't, you know, feel, is my blood pressure improving? So when you're actually in a rut and not doing well, but planning to make a change, that's actually a great time to get some of those baseline numbers measured. And I know people don't like to because they say, well, I don't want anybody to see those numbers until I'm fit or until I'm running that half marathon. But actually to see progress and feel that intrinsic reward of improved health, it is actually great to have those baseline numbers.
On the subject of numbers, do you encourage people to get their measurements as well, their waist measurements, leg measurements?
It's a good idea because also you could see those numbers change where you might not see weight change. We get very, very, very focused on weight, but there are some things that change maybe before the weight changes. Again, we're all a little bit different. It doesn't mean that it's not going to come, but weight is an outcome. It's not a behavior. So we really need to stay focused on what our behaviors are that are going to lead to that weight loss.
We're talking today about goal setting, setting reasonable goals, and achieving those goals. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Dave in Cedar Falls sent us an email. He says, isn't it all about priorities? The amount of available time is fixed, isn't it? So, Kevin, how do you respond to that?
Well, I think so. time is fixed, but I think kind of moving things up in terms of priorities, trying to cut corners every once in a while, maybe starting with, say, I'll get up, 15 minutes early to see what I can do in terms of, getting some exercise in, getting the kids up early, hang out with them, that burns calories, which is something that I've been doing with my 9-month-old. Just doing kind of those types of things. I mean, it is a priority type of system, but then you kind of have to move these things up and see where they go.
How do you respond to that, Megan?
Yeah, the person who emailed is right. We aren't going to get any more time. It's fixed. But what my program focuses a lot on as well is what isn't fixed or what is a renewable source is our energy, so our personal energy. And we probably do have areas that we can renew and expand our energy. And a lot of times healthy behaviors are ways that we can feel a renewed sense of energy. So more motivation or energy to wake up early to do the exercise or whatever it is. So definitely a matter of priorities. We have a lot of competing demands. Some things we have to do, we just don't have a choice when we show up for work or when we leave. But with the rest of our time, we do have a choice in how we spend it.
Well, it can be very, very difficult. For example, fitness is one of my resolutions. I used to work out very regularly. I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and that has changed my priorities dramatically. And this morning, mm-hmm. instead of working out, when my daughter said she needed some mama time, we snuggled instead. And, it's that has to be my priority, but that makes it very hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's life. We all have those priorities and challenges. And I think that's where, goal setting, it's not simple. It's not a cookie cutter, but getting creative. There are probably lots of creative solutions. If we talked about ways to incorporate the kids into physical activity, that would be great to help you achieve your fitness goals. And I think sometimes, too, we get really hung up on ideas of being perfect. The recommendations for physical activity are, 30 to 60 minutes most days of the week. And so we feel like if we're only doing 2 or 3 days, that's not good enough. I'm a failure. And that's not the case at all. It's really about what can we do? What can we fit in? What's realistic for our busy lives? And that's where focusing on the positive comes in. So maybe it wasn't 5 or 6 days a week. Maybe it was 2 or 3. But you know what? That's better than 0.
Larry's on the line in Aledo, Illinois. Hello, Larry.
Yes. I've been a runner for probably 45 years. And you talk about the motivations and the things. People ask me about this a lot, and I tell them that I like to run, but maybe you've got some other exercise you like to do. The trick is to find what it is that you like to do, and so that's part of your motivation. Number two, if you have a use for that exercise. Now, I'm a little farmer, and I live miles from any town, and I don't have a vehicle. I got rid of my vehicles, and that was part of my motivation, is that I either run or bike to all the wherever I go. And so I have to say go to the bank. Okay, well, I'll, slip whatever checks or deposit, whatever, and I'll trot down to on my run to the bank and stop, do the banking, everything. Of course, it doesn't have to be that extreme. But say you need to go to the pharmacy or the store locally or whatever. If you could find some way of incorporating whatever exercise into your daily life, have a use for it other than just the exercise.
Well, Larry.
Point A to point B, that type of thing. Those things help.
Yeah, thank you so much for your suggestion, Larry. That's a really wonderful suggestion. We're running out of time here, but thank you so much for your call, Larry. And my guests are Megan Moeller. She's the Wellness Program Coordinator at the University of Iowa. She'll stay with us. And Kevin Blankenship is an Assistant Professor of Psychology at Iowa State University. Kevin, thank you so much for your time today.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. And coming up in just a minute, we're also going to talk about financial goal setting. Brenda Schmidt from Iowa State University Extension will be here. And you are welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about New Year's resolutions and goal setting. And right now we're going to shift a little bit and talk about financial goals. With us still is Megan Moeller from the Wellness Program at the University of Iowa, but joining us is Brenda Schmidt. She's a Family Resource Management Specialist for Iowa State University Extension, and she works at helping families with their goals to become financially stable, to save money, learn to budget, a few goals that just may be on your list for 2011. Hello, Brenda.
Hello.
Hi, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for the invite.
So, Brenda, when someone comes to you and they say, I have a lot of debt or I need to change my spending habits, where do you start?
Well, I think the first thing they need to do is figure out where their money is going currently to track their spending. And that can be a tedious, time-consuming step to do, but it's essential. Until you know where your money's going, it's difficult to plug your spending leaks or to change your behavior to fix your problem.
So how do you do it?
Well, one way to do it is to track every single penny that goes out. I mean, and if you don't have a receipt from something that you purchased, then you write it down in a notebook. So you're tracking the pop that you buy in the vending machine at work. You're tracking the candy bar, or maybe you work in a fast food place and you're taking cash out of your pocket to buy a burger or something. You have to track every penny where it goes for at least 2 weeks and preferably for a month, and then you can figure out where your money's going.
Wow, that sounds extremely difficult.
It's important to do that at least once a year, especially if you've never worked from a budget before. How would you even know where to begin to figure out how much to budget to spend when you don't know what your current behavior is?
Are there any technologies that you like to employ in helping people track their spending?
The check register is probably the best thing that you can do to track your spending. But now with debit cards, people are not writing down what they spent on their debit card, and so they'll take it out of their wallet, swipe it, and put it back, and then not write it down. And they have small check registers now that are for the debit cards to track that. And I'm thinking that is probably one of the best ways to keep track of that. As far as technology, there are some systems out there, such as Mint, which will track and categorize your expenditures, and they'll forward that information to your smartphones and such.
So just find what works for you, but it sounds like you're a fan of old-fashioned technology, a pen and paper.
Well, sometimes that, if money is an issue, then you don't have access to a lot of the technology
right,
stuff,
right.
So...
So when people come to you, what are the biggest problems that they seem to face money-wise?
Well, they need to identify exactly what their needs are versus what their wants are. And I think some people have a difficult time separating that. For example, some people view a need for a child that's in school, middle school, as a cell phone. And that's actually not a need. That's a want.
So helping people look at what they really need in their lives. Are you finding that people come to you with credit card debt most of the time or trouble paying the mortgage? What are some of the big problems that you see?
The two biggest one is credit card debt, and the second one is college debt. I have a lot of young individuals that will come to me that are looking at $40,000 of debt, and they have an entry-level job with an entry-level wage. And how do you pay off school debt with that kind of a wage? I think that the credit card debt, thinking that you don't have to pay off the total balance, and so then it starts accumulating interest, and then you start paying interest on interest, I think those are the two biggest problems I'm seeing.
When you sit down with someone and you work on tracking spending and setting a budget plan, what's the hardest thing for people to accept about living within their means?
I think when I have parents that come in, oftentimes they don't want to deny their children things. They want them to be able to have all the same fun and the same things that their friends are doing. And it's a difficult thing for them to say that, you know, if you live in town and your child is going to school, he doesn't need a car to drive to school. Or having to be able to text and to have a smartphone isn't a need. And I think it's difficult for parents to say no to their children. When I do this one activity with classes and individuals, and we sit down and I have them look at the things they spend their money on, the things that aren't needs, like the coffee at the drive-up room, or I'll have them identify what is the vice that they're spending money on and then actually calculate how much that vice is costing them. And one of the examples that I had is an individual figured out that he was spending over $2,000 a year in $20 bills that they'd give their kid. I want to go to the game. Here's a 20. I want to go to a movie. Here's a 20. And he figured out that he needed to put his kid on a budget because he himself needed to live on a budget.
Is it hard to get people to accept that they're going to have to live without some of the things that they enjoy?
Yes, it is. And I had one individual that was in tears because she was not going to be able to provide a Christmas the amount of gifts and things that she normally would have. And I said, you know, your kids are smart. They hear what the economy is like. They're going to understand totally. And after the Christmas, and it was a very homemade and time spent rather than money spent Christmas, she was extremely pleased and thought it was a wonderful Christmas despite the lack of monetary gifts that were purchased.
You mentioned the economy, and of course, times have been tough. Do you have a lot of people coming to you who have lost their job and are trying to get by on unemployment now?
Yes, that has been kind of a depressing part of my job, is working with the number of people. I'll give you an example. Like 3 years ago when we started Vita Sites, that's a volunteer income tax assistance site, the number of people that were bringing in unemployment as income they had to declare was just a handful, maybe five or six. And then last year, I maybe had five or six that didn't have unemployment to claim as income. And that's just a reality of our time.
Do you see an uptick in people coming to you in January with New Year's resolutions that they want to reach?
Yes. And oftentimes it's because the reality of what they spent at Christmas is on their credit cards. And now how do I get that paid off?
Do you think this is a good time of year to rethink our spending habits?
Yes, it is. And I think it's just always a good time to ponder where you've been and what you've done. The other thing I like to really focus people on is, and it was something that Kevin in your earlier segment had talked about, was your two greatest resources are your money and your time. And you need to make sure that you spend your money and your time on your highest priorities. And I like to encourage people to set goals and to prioritize those. And to you are your worst enemy, and you know where you're weakest at. So if you're weak with the credit card, then type up your goals in the order that they're the most important to you and tape it on your credit card. So when you're tempted to pull the card out and swipe it, stop and look at, is what you're about to buy on your top priorities? If you're weakest in your checkbook, do the same in your checkbook. If it's home shopping, then put it on your priorities on a list by your TV so that you're not tempted to spend money on things that aren't on your top priorities.
If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. If you're working on financial goals right now, if you're working on fitness goals and you'd like to get some input from our guests today, you can give us a call. Or if you have a success story, if you've turned your life around in one category or another, we'd love to hear your story. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk, or send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Megan, do you see a lot more people coming to you in January with New Year's resolutions?
Yeah, it's definitely the time of year when, you know, it's a new year, a new opportunity. People do see kind of a renewed sense. And, you know, sometimes if it maybe wasn't the best year, the year before, we maybe didn't get everything done that we intended to. It is a time for renewal. So it is interesting, you know, late or early to mid fall, we do start talking about the holidays already. And then kind of after the holidays, it kind of instantly turns into the New Year resolution time. So absolutely.
Do you see any pitfalls to starting a whole bunch of new goals in January in the depths of winter?
Yeah. Well, a whole bunch of new goals. Absolutely. We definitely want to focus in on the priorities. You know, one or two, we can easily get overwhelmed. But certainly, you know, most of us do live in Iowa, so we have some common challenges and barriers. The weather would certainly be one. Hours of daylight would be another. So those are things that we need to consider, because that's probably not going to change.
Now, a lot of us have goals every year, and a lot of us make the same New Year's resolution every year. And I'll ask you first, Megan, and then you, Brenda. When somebody comes to you with a goal, how do you know they're ready, and how can they know they're really ready to achieve it this time?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I think asking why now, you know, what's different now than a year ago? What I always like to do is encourage people, although you've tried before and you haven't met your goal, what did you learn from each one of those experiences? And no, they're not failures. They're experiences, they're learning opportunities, and those probably better prepared you this time around. So I think learning from past experiences and drawing on those do put us in a better position to succeed.
Now, Brenda, when people come to you, maybe they don't have that much of a choice about being ready or not, but how do you know they're ready?
Well, I think they can identify what it is that's been their failure in the past, and they're looking for solutions around that. How can they set themselves up for success?
Sarah is on the line in Center Point. Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Hi, Sarah. What would you like to talk about?
I would just like to talk about, I'm sure I'm in a similar position as many other students getting out of school. I graduated in 2008 when the job market wasn't so good, you know, in the decline. And I have accumulated over $100,000 in debt, and, you know, trying to find a job just to pay that student loan debt is, you know, pretty difficult, because, you know, once I get a paycheck, my whole paycheck goes to pay my student loan debt, and you know, you're forced to try to figure out what in my life can I not have? You know, what do I need to pay for? And so it's pretty difficult.
Brenda, can you help Sarah figure out where to start?
Well, with debt, you have two choices. You can increase your income or decrease your expenses. And from what you're saying, it sounds like you're pretty much down to the bare bones already. And I know this is a hard time to find a second job, let alone a first job. You may want to talk with your creditors and see if you can work out a payment plan or talk to them about reducing your interest rate or even forgiving some interest to get you on a structured payment that would help you meet their needs as well as make sure you have a roof over your head and food in your stomach.
Okay.
Brenda, where would Sarah turn if she wants to work with someone on setting up a budget to work on that debt? How would she get in touch with people at Extension or ask questions?
Well, there's an Extension office in every county. You can go in and talk to them and ask for their resource management program specialist, which is what I am. And that individual would be the one that can help problem solve and set her, point her in directions of where to go. What it sounds like in what she said, that her debt is mainly college debt. And I think that there's some programs out there that would help her restructure that debt.
Okay. And so someone at her local Extension office may be able to put her in touch with those programs.
The person local to her. Yeah. Closest to her.
All right, Sarah, thank you so much for calling and good luck with that. Brenda, when people come to you with a problem like that, that sounds like a problem that's almost impossible to even start thinking about if you have $100,000 in debt. Where do you start?
Well, the thing is that with college debt, you can't bankrupt that. But you're just going to have to there's ways of going in and getting it restructured. And I think there are some programs out there right now, federal government programs that can help students with debt like that. And you need to look into, if you talk to people who own the debt, they're the ones that will tell you where you can go and help you figure out a solution.
If you could give people one piece of advice about managing their finances, Brenda, what would it be?
It's to sit down and actually make a plan. I look at kids today going into college and they want to do it the way their parents did. And that's just not possible. They may have to have a 6-year school plan where they work their way through college, or they need to really look at the number of scholarships that are out there that are left on the table and unclaimed, because you can't do it the way you used to. Otherwise, you leave college with $40,000 of debt.
Or even more.
But the important thing is, college is a good investment in yourself. It still pays out in the long run. I'm not trying to discourage people from not going to college.
And Megan, for people who made any kind of a goal on January 1st, what is your one best piece of advice for them?
Well, the piece of advice I would have is to spend some time doing the thinking work behind the goal. So rather than just getting out there and working towards it, doing a little bit of that planning. So what are your main motivators? Who can help you along the way?
And how to measure that progress as
exactly,
well.
As we talked about earlier, making it specific, a very specific goal rather than broad.
All right. Megan Moeller, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Megan is the Wellness Program Coordinator at the University of Iowa. And Brenda, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Brenda Schmidt is a Family Resource Management Specialist for Iowa State University Extension. She's in Black Hawk County. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Alex Hoyer. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Mitchell Schmidt. Technical support from Michael Yeager in Ames and Phil Moss in Cedar Falls. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org anytime. And you can send us email anytime. We'd love to hear your suggestions for things you'd like to hear on the show or your comments about things you've heard. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. Tomorrow on Talk of Iowa, the history of tuberculosis. We'll revisit Iowa City's historic Oakdale Hall, once a sanatorium for people with tuberculosis, and talk about the history of the disease and what's going on with tuberculosis worldwide right now. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.